Chapter 94. The latter are turning out from their bivouacs. They move stiffly from their wet rest, and hurry to and fro like ants in an anthill. The tens of thousands of moving specks are largely of a brick-red color, but the foreign contingent is darker. Breakfasts are cooked over smoky fires of green wood. Innumerable groups, many in their shirt sleeves, clean their rusty firelocks, drawing or exploding the charges, scrape the mud from themselves, and typically from their cross belts the red dye washed off their jackets by the rain. At 6 o'clock, they parade, spread out, and take up their positions, in the line of battle, the front of which extends in a wavy ribbon 3 miles long, with three projecting bunches at Hougomont, La Haye Saint, and La Haye. Looking across to the French positions, we observe that, after advancing in dark streams from where they have passed the night, they too deploy and wheel into their fighting places figures with red epaulettes and hairy knapsacks, their arms glittering like a display of cutlery at a hillside fair. They assume three concentric lines of crescent shape that converge on the English midst, with great blocks of the Imperial Guard at the back of them. The rattle of their drums, their fanfarades, and their bands playing Alan's O Salut de l'Empereur contrast with the quiet reigning on the English side. A knot of figures, comprising Wellington with a suite of general and other staff officers, ride backwards and forwards in front of the English lines, where each regimental color floats in the hands of the junior ensign. The Duke himself, now a man of 46, is on his bay charger Copenhagen, in light pantaloons, a small plumeless hat, and a blue cloak, which shows its white lining when blown back. On the French side too, a detached group creeps along the front in preliminary survey. Bonaparte, also 46 in a gray overcoat, is mounted on his white Arab Marengo, and accompanied by Soult, Ney, Jerome, Drouet, and other marshals. The figures of aides move to and fro like shuttlecocks between the group and distant points in the field. The sun has begun to gleam. Spirit of the pities, discriminate these, and what they are, who stand so stalwartly to war. Spirit of the years, report, ye rumorers of things near and far. Semi-chorus I of rumors, chanting, sweep first the Frenchman's leftward lines along, and I the peaceful pains of Hougomont, that seem to hold prescriptive right of peace and fee from time till time itself should cease. Jarred now by Riel's fierce foot divisions 3, flanked on their left by Pyre's cavalry. The fourfold corps of Derlon, spread at length, compose the right, east of the famed Chaussee the shelterless Charleroi and Brussels way, and Jacquin its alert light steeded strength still further right, their sharpened swords display. Thus stands the first line. Semi-chorus 2, next behind its back comes Count Laube, left of the Brussels track, then Doman's horse, the horse of Suburvi, Kellerman's cuirass troopers twinkle-tipped, and backing Derlon, Milhaud's horse, equipped likewise in burnished steelwork sunshine dipped. So ranks the second line refulgently. Semi-chorus I, the third and last embattlement reveals Derlon's, Laube's, and Riel's foot cannoneers, and horse-drawn ordnance too, on massy wheels, to strike with cavalry where space appears. Semi-chorus II, the English front, to left, as flanking force, as Vandeleur's hussars, and Vivian's horse. Next them pace Picton's rows along the crest, the Hanoverian foot folk, Wink, Best, Bylandt's brigade, set forward fencelessly, Pack's northern clansmen, Kempt's tough infantry, with Gator, Epaulette, Spat, and Philibeg, while Alcott, Umtita, and Kolmansig prolong the musters, near whose forward edge bearing invests the farm of Holy Hedge. Semi-chorus I, Maitland and Bingen Cook's division range, and round Dun Hougomont's old lichen sides a dense array of watching guardsmen hides amid the peaceful produce of the grange, whose new kerned apples, hairy gooseberries green, and mint, and thyme, the ranks intrude between. Last, westward of the road that finds Nivelles, Duplet draws up, and Adam parallel. Semi-chorus 2, the second British line embattled horse holds the reverse slopes, screened, in ordered course, Dornbergs, and the Redschultz, and Colkin and Grants, and left of them, behind where Alten plants his regiments, come the household cavalry, and nigh, in Picton's rear, the trumpets call the 9th Brigade of Ponsonby. Behind these the reserves. In front of all, or interspaced, with slow-matched gunners manned, up throated rows of threatful ordnance stand. The clock of Nivelles Convent Church strikes 11 in the distance. Shortly after, coils of starched blue smoke burst into being along the French lines, and the English batteries respond promptly, in an ominous roar that can be heard at Antwerp. A column from the French left, 6,000 strong, advances on the plantation in front of the Chateau of Hougomont. They are played upon by the English ordnance, but they enter the wood, and dislodge some battalions there. The French approach the buildings, but are stopped by a loopholed wall with a mass of English guards behind it. A deadly fire bursts from these through the loops, and over the summit. Napoleon orders a battery of howitzers to play upon the building. Flames soon burst from it, but the foot guards still hold the courtyard. Scene 2, the same. The French position, on a hillock near the farm of Rossum, a small table from the farmhouse has been placed. Maps are spread thereon, and a chair is beside it. Napoleon, Soult, and other marshals are standing round, their horses waiting at the base of the slope. Napoleon looks through his glass at Hougomont. His elevated face makes itself distinct in the morning light as a gloomy, resentful countenance, blue-black where shaven, and stained with snuff, with powderings of the same on the breast of his uniform. His stumpy figure, being just now thrown back, accentuates his stoutness. Napoleon, let Riel be warned, that these his surly sets on Hougomont Chateau, can scarce defray their mounting bill of blood. They do not touch the core of my intent to pierce, and roll the center upon the right of those opposed. Thereon will turn the outcome of the day, in which our odds are 90 to their 10. Soult, yes, prove their time and promptitude enough, to call back Crouchy here. Of his approach I see no sign. Napoleon, roughly, hours past he was bid come. But not imports it. We are enough without him. You have been beaten by this Wellington, and so you think him great. But let me teach you Wellington is no foe to reckon with. His army, too, is poor. This clash today is more serious for our seasoned files than break-fasting. Soult, such is my earnest hope. Napoleon, observe that Wellington still labors on, stoutening his right behind Gaumont Chateau, but leaves his left and center as before weaker, if anything. He plays our game. Wellington can, in fact, be seen detaching from his main line several companies of guards, to check the aims of the French on Hougomont. Let me reword my tactics. Ney leads off by seizing Mont Saint John. Then Derlon stirs, and heaves up his division from the left. The second corps will move abreast of him, the sappers nearing, to entrench themselves within the aforesaid farm. Enter an aide-de-camp. Aide, from Marshal Ney, sire, I bring hasty word, that all is poised to strike the vital stroke, and only waits your majesty's command. Napoleon, which he shall have, when I have scanned the hills for Grouchy's helms. Napoleon turns his glass to an upland 4 or 5 miles off on the right, known as St. Lambert's Chapel Hill. Gazing more and more intently, he takes rapid pinches of snuff in excitement. Ney's columns meanwhile standing for the word to advance, 80 guns being ranged in front of La Belle Alliance in support of them. I see a darkly crawling, slug-like shape embodying far out there, troops seemingly Grouchy's vanguard. What think you? Soult also examining closely, verily troops, and, maybe, Grouchy's. But the air is hazed. Napoleon, if troops at all, they are Grouchy's. Why misgive, and force on ills you fear? Another marshal, it seems a wood. Trees don bold outlines in their new-leafed pride. Another marshal, it is the creeping shadow from a cloud. Another Marshall, it is a mass of stationary foot. I can describe piled arms. Napoleon sends off the order for Ney's attack the Grand Assault on the English midst, including the farm of La Haye Sainte. It opens with a half hour's thunderous discharge of artillery, which ceases at length to let Darlon's infantry pass. Four huge columns of these, shouting defiantly, push forwards in face of the reciprocal fire from the cannon of the English. Their effrontery carries them so near the Anglo-Allied lines that the latter waver. But Picton brings up Pack's brigade, before which the French in turn recede, though they make an attempt in La Haye Sainte, when Sparing's Germans pour a resolute fire. Wellington, who is seen afar as one of a group standing by a great elm, orders Umtiti to send assistance to Baring, as may be gathered from the darting of aides to and fro between the points, like houseflies dancing their quadrilles. East of the great highway the right columns of Darlon's corps have climbed the slopes. Bylandt's sorely exposed Dutch are broken, and in their flight disorder the ranks of the English 28th, the carabineers of the 95th being also dislodged from the sand pit they occupied.
Napoleon, all prospers marvelously. Gaumont is hemmed, La Haye Sainte too, their center jeopardized. Travers and Darlon dominate the crest. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.